Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Something Offbeat. This week, we're bringing you a roundup of weird news from our Odyssey radio stations across the nation. Check in next week to get some dispatches from our host Mike Rogers' Other Side of the News feature on KRLD 1080. First up today, we're headed to New Orleans, Louisiana. That's where Tommy Tucker of WWL Radio spoke with Aaron Ashbrook, assistant professor of urban and peri-urban etymology at Louisiana State University, about something kind of nightmarish. You see, summertime in the U.S. comes with longer days, warmer weather, and often more bugs than usual. Some are kind of cute, like lightning bugs, while others are a bit scarier.
So let's talk about these. What is it, a stinging Asian needle ant? How big are these? Where'd they come from? How much of a threat are they?
Yeah, so the Asian needle ant, it's a medium-sized ant. I would say probably about the large size of the fire ants. This would probably be equivalent to what the Asian needle ant looks like. Now, remember, mm-hmm. those fire ants, they have multiple sizes that they can be in. This ant is from Asia, China, Japan, that area. It typically lives in forested areas, and that is also where we found it here in Louisiana. Now, this ant has a similar impact on the environment as our other invasive ant species. It has the potential to impact native fauna through outcompeting other native ants. Mm-hmm. And our native ants, they help support our native ecosystem. The other side effect or potential danger of this ant, I would say, is, of course, these medical aspects that we're seeing and hearing about with this ant. Now, as you already alluded to, it is capable of stinging. Mm-hmm. Now, it is not an aggressive ant. It's not like a fire ant. It won't come after you. However, there is that potential, if you are hypersensitive, to be stung and for that ant to induce anaphylaxis if you are sensitive. And so there is that risk associated with this ant.
So where did they come from again? How did they get here?
Yeah, so they came from China or Japan. They are an Asian native ant. I don't particularly know how they got here. We did start to find them, I believe, in the 1930s in Georgia. So they have been here for some time. Now, within Louisiana, we had not had any reports of the ants. And so we actually started to get some inquiries. People were asking if it was here. And so actually we looked on a citizen scientist website called iNaturalist. Mm-hmm. We actually had two reports by some citizen scientists, Sean Golden and Mike Tybin. They were actually really critical in us finding this ant in the state. Essentially, we went and ground-truthed their sightings. We collected the ant. We brought it back to the lab and identified it and confirmed that it was, in fact, the Asian needle ant.
Would we recognize these? Do they build an ant hill bigger than any other? Or, I mean, how would we know if we see them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So this is a different ant in that sense. It does not create mounds in the traditional sense. They typically live in close association with termites.
You see that, Aaron? It's all about who you hang out with. That tells you everything you need to know, don't you think?
That's right.
Right there. Okay,
and
So,
with the termites, hopefully they will consume some Formosan subterranean termites for us. However, they live in that wet wood. That's what they're feeding upon, as well as other insects. So you would typically encounter them if you're digging in the soil or you're working with wet wood. They're kind of more on the outskirts of environments. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that they can't invade our territory and potentially cause health effects if they sting us.
Got to tell you, Aaron, you got everybody's attention when you said eat Formosan termites, do they?
Well, they are a termite specialist. They do prefer to eat termites. I don't know what the impact will be on our Formosan subterranean termites. I'm sure they're here to stay. But if they can reduce some of those numbers, I'm sure everybody would be happy.
See, I know that one thing that I can remember when I first learned about this in grammar school about ecosystems, maybe seventh grade, and how delicate they are and how just a little bit of this can mess up a lot of that. But, man, if these things could eat termites, I guess that would be good, but then you might have to find something to eat the stinging Asian needle ant.
That's correct, and at this time, we don't have any predators for the Asian needle ant. Maybe other invasive ants might suppress their populations. That could be why we hadn't found them in Louisiana until recently. But, you know, given that potential, I don't think they would completely eliminate termites. However, like I said, there could be some exclusion effects where the ants come in, the Asian needle ants come in and take over an environment. Maybe there would be less termites in that area, maybe less of our other invasive ants as well if they're able to establish a foothold. Now, they don't build as big of colonies mm-hmm. as, say, fire ants, so that would be a disadvantage to them compared to some of our other invasive ants that we have.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now we'll head to Kansas City, Missouri, where KMBZ's Dana and Parks show discussed a surprising potential treatment for male pattern baldness. We'll give you a clue about what it is. You wouldn't want to leave this out in your kitchen if you were afraid of those ants we just talked about invading your home.
I do not have baldness in my family, but I have many people close to me who happen to be bald. And scientists may have accidentally found a way to reverse hair loss without drugs. New research suggests the cure to male pattern baldness,
classic horseshoe pattern,
might be sugar. Some nice little seedlings here. The team stimulated testosterone-based balding in mice and then treated the mice with sugar, which stimulated blood vessel formation and ultimately caused hair regrowth.
Are we talking like sugar in our diet or are we rubbing sugar on our heads?
Do not go home and rub sugar on your head, but if you do, please send a video.
Okay.
Researchers say the sugar treatment in mice was just as effective as minoxidil, the active ingredient in Rogaine. And the sugar is called, Sam, look this up, deoxyribose sugar.
Mm, common spelling.
D-E-O-X-Y. R-I-B-O-S-E sugar. What is that?
Deoxyribose sugar is a 5-carbon sugar, specifically a pentose, which would be 5-carbon sugar.
Well, what is it? It's diabolical sugar.
It forms the backbone of DNA.
Hereditary pattern baldness affects roughly 40% of people. And no, it is not exclusive to men. We all know women who've battled hair loss, right?
It alternates between phosphate groups and nitrogen bases.
Doesn't help me. While the average person loses about 100 hairs per day, listen to this. The average person loses 100 hairs a day. Individuals suffering from hereditary pattern baldness lose even more, sometimes entire chunks at a time. And that can begin in your 20s, 30s, or after menopause in women. Perhaps most shockingly, the idea that the baldness gene comes from the mother's side is actually false. I have always been told baldness passes down from the mom's side of the tree.
I have too.
Nope. Hereditary pattern baldness is dependent on genetic factors from both parents.
Oh, I'm doomed.
So it is one specific type of sugar, that D word sugar. Our bodies naturally produce that substance, and it does play a key role in DNA stability and replication.
So I found what foods you can consume to get deoxyribose.
Thank you. What is it?
All foods derived from any living organism, a.k.a.
cows.
All food.
Well, Triscuits are not derived from a living organism.
Well, they were at one point.
Male pattern baldness is such a common condition affecting men all over the world, but the moment there are only two FDA-licensed drugs to treat it, there's still only two drugs. Can you believe that? Our research suggests that the answer to treating hair loss might be as simple as using a naturally occurring sugar to boost the blood supply to the hair follicles to encourage hair growth. Interestingly, as with most studies, this 8-year-long study did not start as an attempt to cure hair loss. The team was originally studying mice to understand if and how sugar could help heal wounds by encouraging new blood vessels to form.
Now, this is not saying to go home and just start pounding sugary food.
No,
this
is not your table
sugar. This is not granulated sugar. This is
naturally occurring sugar. But this is funny, Sam. They were trying to study mice and wounds. And so one can imagine they shaved the hair off the mice, right?
Yeah.
Let's get rid of the hair. Do some wound treatment. Let's see if sugar helps. And then accidentally, the hair started to grow back.
Hmm.
Oh, my God. I love science. The naturally occurring sugar, by the way, according to the author of the paper, is inexpensive and stable.
I've also always heard that zinc will help with hair growth.
It is deliverable in several forms, quote, making it an attractive candidate for further research. All right, speaking of sugar, we teased this story earlier. Here it is. How much would you pay for a piece of cake from Queen Elizabeth's wedding?
I know. That sounds interesting, too, but I'm going to have to cut us off there. And speaking of high society, listen to this last piece from Jason DeRusha at WCCO News Talk in Minnesota's Twin Cities. This week, he discussed America's love-hate relationship with wealth.
I love rich people. I hate rich people. I think it's sort of how a lot of us feel. And Evan Bramstedt wrote about this in the Star Tribune today as the Minnesota Star Tribune published their list of CEO pay, which will, Evan, most people, it will make you a little sick. It's crazy.
It is pretty crazy. There's a lot of money every year. We do this. We put together the data that comes out every spring. Companies have to disclose this. The investment rules require it. And so we just, you know, many companies here in Minnesota, based here in Minnesota, and we've been doing this for many years. We just take a look at the data and rack it up.
And just put it up, right. Yeah. And, you know, these numbers always get a little complicated, right? Because
right,
you have different stock options and
right,
different benefits, whatever. The bottom line is we have a complicated relationship in America, in Minnesota, with CEO pay, which is sort of what you were exploring, right?
Yeah, that's so, you know, that I like to write about the trade-offs a lot when in my column, on almost any issue, because nothing is ever really black and white. You and I have talked about this before.
Right,
we find our way into the gray quite a lot. And so it is with the perceptions of wealth, right? Because, yeah, we put the headline of something like, we all want to be rich. We're also wary of the rich, you know?
Yeah,
and so there's actually a great new book out about this topic called The Haves and the Have-Yachts by another journalist named Evan Osnos of The New Yorker. And I had just read it. And you know, this package came together, at the Star Tribune. And I thought, oh, you know what? I should just put my thumb right on this duality that we all have.
Well, and we just all sort of watched with maybe not equal amounts of fascination and disgust, the
Bezos
wedding.
Yeah.
Which
had a lot of yachts.
It had a lot of yachts.
Yeah.
And I always think about this in Minnesota, that in Minnesota, we have wealth. But when you talk to Minnesotans who have moved to L.A. or even Naples, Florida,
right.
Or New York City, our wealth is sort of adorable compared to, like, the real wealth.
Yeah, I spent...
Which is all very far from what regular people are.
Right. I spent the early part of my career in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And Dallas wears its wealth very much on the sleeve in a way that, really makes would make Minnesotans blush, you know. And I always found that so fascinating. The Dallas Morning News, for instance, had a weekly feature called Fashion Dallas. This is back in the 90s and early 2000s. And, you know, that never happened at the Minnesota Star Tribune. There was not any sort of paying of attention to the ups and downs of fashion, you know, here in Minnesota and stuff. And so, this was a place, Neiman Marcus, the big Dallas department store, didn't last very long when it came up here to the Twin Cities. Saks Fifth Avenue, less than 20 years. You know, Saks off Fifth lasted, but not the main department store.
Yeah, there's sort of a Minnesota, I find it to be a little fake, this fake modesty where you hide... You keep your fancy car in some garage in Chanhassen, and you keep your less fancy car in your driveway. But we as Americans, you cited a statistic that had a crazy amount of Americans who actually say they want to become a billionaire, which maybe gets to the heart of why we have this complex.
It's almost like equal parts wanting and revulsion. Like it was a Harris poll done last fall, and it said, I've forgotten the precise amount, but it was somewhere around 65-70% want to be billionaires. And then the almost the same precise number replied, yes, I agree to the statement, billionaires are not making America better off or something.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
I do think there is a little bit of an American dream scenario where even if you look at the rich and you say, you know, I don't know, I believe in capitalism.
I do too.
But I also am concerned that the way that capitalism is playing out today is not the way that it's supposed to play out. That the successes of our businesses and of our wealthy are not being shared because we're a service economy. We don't need to pay the employees to be able to go and buy the kitchen table that you're producing.
Right.
So you end up with this sort of screwed up system where all the money's going to Wall Street. At the same time, like, I do admire people who built these businesses and are putting their butt on the line for, so how mad can I be about it?
And I admire the people who are leading the businesses, frankly. You know, this morning, the Minnesota Business Partnership, which is the group of CEOs, had an event at Medtronic's headquarters, and they rang the opening bell for the New York Stock Exchange. And there were 15 to 20 of our CEOs there, and it was a great opportunity to meet and chat with them informally and everything like that. And when you encounter folks like this, you realize they are there for a reason. You know, they are smart people. And they are exceptional leaders. They have certain skills that I do not possess, you may not possess. And so it's very, very rare have I met a CEO who I thought, oh, what is that guy doing? Or what is that woman doing? Yeah. You know, they don't really belong in that position. I mean, folks are generally in these roles because they have certain skills and gifts, you know.
This is a political debate, of course, around the country right now.
Yes.
And we especially see it playing out in New York City. But to a lesser degree, I think we see these same sort of tensions playing out here in our cities, in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and the way that our regular people are sending some people who identify as democratic socialists into our city councils. And so this isn't just an abstract debate, right? Because this debate about what we do with the rich really underlies a lot of our political discussion today.
Absolutely. And as well, I always go back ultimately to the notion of growth and the notion that we want to still have some level of economic growth because that's how everybody gets lifted up. If you don't have any economic growth, the only way to help poor people is to take money from the wealthy people. And they're not going to allow that, basically, you know. And ultimately, that's where this starts to play out in politics, is how close do we get to that extreme?
And it's a concern here where you say, are we driving away the people who are paying the most in taxes?
Correct.
Not that we need to kiss their butt, but we also don't need to kick their butt, no. I think. Like, it's sort of that balance.
Right. And ultimately, I think in a way, this is a kind of a nice problem to have. Because the opposite of the problem is to be in a place where you have no opportunity to become rich, mm-hmm. or you have no opportunity to shine a light on power and challenge power. And there are plenty of countries like that around the world where they're you know, this tension that we're talking about, this back and forth, is actually a nice thing to have in a society.
Thank you so much for listening to Something Offbeat. This episode was produced by me, Lauren Barry. Special thanks to WWL in New Orleans, KMBZ in Kansas City, and WCCO in the Twin Cities.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.